Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Hello, and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today, we have a true powerhouse in marketing joining us, Alex Henthrone Iwani. In his own words, he's a multi-exit, full-stack B2B marketing executive, technologist, and advisors, and he's currently doing fractional CMO work. I have followed a number of Alex's posts, including one he summarized his experience at the recently concluded AutoCon Zero. A very interesting experience, which I'm really looking forward to digest more of. I am super excited to have Alex on the show today, and I know we'll have a great time, you know, talking more about his background, his wealth of knowledge and experience. So let's dive right in. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Eric. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, you have posted some very interesting posts. In fact, one that was talked about this morning when I was having a conversation with somebody else, they were talking about treating network as pet versus cattle. And, you know, I'm ready to talk to somebody who maybe from a marketing perspective, right? Because most of my audience and my colleagues are engineers, but very interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was one of the concepts that came out in AutoCon, and clearly network automation at large is really trying to borrow a lot of concepts from Lean and DevOps and things like that. And one of the major concepts is how do you manage, you know, things as herds of cattle versus sort of special pets.
Yeah.
And the cloud really does a lot towards that, because when you're not dealing with hardware, obviously, everything's virtualized.
Sure.
And essentially the concept of being disposable, then you can really do a kind of operation en masse at scale that has, I think, really eluded networking. And there's some, the reason I was interested in this is because I think the analogy only goes so far in terms of addressing some of the hard realities of networking. And yeah, there's some interesting, I think it's always very important when you're trying to build a movement to have the right sort of scope of ambition. Right?
Yeah.
You say, all right, well, it has to be like this, but it's kind of impossible. Then it's just discouraging and you're going to give up, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think there's clear that we need to have network engineering move more and more towards programming, automation, systems thinking, all that. It's been clear for some time, but there's been a lot of obstacles. So this is just one of those areas that I thought, yeah, you know, well, what are the aspects of networking that are more pet-like and that don't translate into, you know, the cattle analogy, so that you just don't develop the wrong expectation. If you're dealing with networks as an engineer, you already know this very viscerally, right? Like if you deal with the fact that, like, for example, you know, failover or redundancy in most networks is not like, you know, it's not disposability. It's just not.
No.
You have two, maybe if you're really lucky, you have three.
Mm-hmm.
Failovers, right? You know, think about uplinks, all that kind of stuff. You're still in a very bespoke level of redundancy. And that's just one example. And then, you know, kind of giving thought to beyond sort of some of the technical aspects, just what about the kind of the economics of networking have made it so there's a culture of what I call like pet whispering, you know, like speaking pet languages, which is like, okay, I'm trained in vendor X.
Yeah.
And vendor X, without naming names, has been very successful in creating an economy of scarcity of skills,
which right,
means that there's demand for those people. And then they want to pull in vendor X's equipment and sure, it goes on.
Right.
But that creates a dynamic of like, wanting to be a specialist in that particular pet language.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, without naming, but they rhyme with San Francisco. But yeah, anyways.
Successful. I mean, kudos to the economic model. They were very successful. Yeah. And they actually, you could say generationally, that model elevated networking to a really, had some cachet to the craft, right? Mm. And they branded a craft around their pet language. And, maybe that was an evolutionary step, but it's not going to take us into the future. And one of the things I think that is really interesting is that the one of the lessons from DevOps was that early vendors really were much less protective. Now, they could kind of afford to be because they weren't selling hardware. But they were selling maybe an automation approach.
Sure.
But the protectiveness around pet languages and pet APIs and sort of the incompleteness of a lot of the interfaces and the uniqueness of the interfaces perpetuates that sort of culture and expectation. And that's one of the things I think it has to change, because otherwise what you have is you have a never ending loop of technical debt and race condition, right? Like you have, if you have a brownfield network, you have a technical debt that extends years back of interfaces that do not have an API.
Sure. Right?
And all that, or the API is just not very good. And then you have a race condition of new technical, try to catch up with the new stuff, in terms of automation. That's a really hard thing to overcome. Like you want the greenfield to be really pristine in terms of its enabling of automation.
Yeah. I mean, I already know we're going to have a great conversation just by like that past 6 minutes of our conversation. But I wanted to, kind of start out by getting the origin story, right? Because I mean, I get exhausted just reading all the titles you've been doing, right? Like marketing and technologists and advisors. Yeah. But how did you get into technology? How did you like a little bit about your origin story? How did you become interesting in all of these?
Well, it was not really on purpose. I mean, when I got out of school, I was looking for a job, and I landed in a systems integrator.
Okay.
And it was one of those kind of things. I don't have an engineering degree. I was a French literature major.
Nice.
Now, one of the things I'll have to say about studying languages, it does help you develop stamina for learning other languages like protocols.
Sure.
Because they're languages. And
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think the creator of Perl, Larry Wall, he's actually a linguist and musician. And so, right along that line, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I stumbled into, I need a job. I went to work for the system integrator. And then it was sort of led me down this path of like, oh, can you learn this? Can you learn this? Can you learn this? And all of a sudden, I was kind of a technical person. I was like designing networks and, installing gear and upgrading stuff and all that kind of thing for customers. And then I went onto the vendor side, I was working with networking gear, in fairly large companies, as clients. And then, then I was managing some systems engineers. I had a mentor who said, you're kind of a strategic thinker. You should think about getting more into like a corporate job, like product management. I was like, what's that? Mm-hmm. So I landed a technical marketing job at a startup. I'm severely aging myself, but this was like the start of the commercial internet. It was a company called Livingston, and they made this product called the Portmasters. People who were in the ISP community back then, so I was working doing stuff, and that's where I really got connected to the internet as a technology, routing protocols, AAA, like Livingston, they invented radius, which then turned into diameter and stuff like that. And so I was in the same room with the people who were writing the RFCs and all that kind of stuff. So it was, I just got really steeped in a lot of that stuff from that point, much more deeply. And from there, just kind of followed a journey on through, product management, and then eventually kind of made the switch into marketing. But I've always held on to my roots of being technically curious.
Mm-hmm.
because I think that particularly for people who are doing nerdy things, your head is so full of all of that. It's hard to then, if you want someone to, trying to market your products, you need someone who actually has enough curiosity to figure out what it is really, what's right. actually special about it technically, what the value is technically, and then what the value is to a business.
Right.
And that takes some abstraction. But I still stay really technically curious because of that. I actually really like to learn the tech, even as a marketer to this day.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very accurate what you talked about on you got to stay curious because then, I mean, for me having worked in the corporate world for the last 20 some odd years, the most successful people who get into the business, especially for a newcomer, is they're offering their service as a gift, right? They have the mindset of, hey, I have this awesome thing. I'm mm-hmm. curious at how can it bring value to you? And so put the customer at the center of the conversation, right? And as opposed to, hey, I have this awesome thing. How can I benefit from your dollar, or your purse? So I think that mindset definitely helps in being a marketer or a technically curious marketer.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, if you think about it, and this bridges into sort of the challenge for network automation is that there's an aspect of it which is all about empathy to the goal, right? Mm-hmm. What's the outcome, right? That's desired. You could call that intent. Right? Sure. What's the intent of the and it gets into things like the whole. Not maybe even a debate, hopefully anymore, but the reason for distinguishing between automation and orchestration, for example, mm-hmm. where like, okay, automation, you could say this is just semantics, but there's an important distinction between saying I'm automating a task or I'm building a process that achieves an outcome where there's some kind of value.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the same thing as a marketer, I want to know what is it that, and you get into kind of concepts like jobs to be done, things like that, right? Where it's just what's the job that needs to get done here? And then along with that, what's the pain in that trying to get that job done? And is there a solution to that, that adds value? And if there is, then we should build the product to that. And then we want to make that clear.
Yeah.
That's what marketing is like helping people to understand, sometimes like diagnose their own pain. Because maybe they've just lived with it for so long, they're just used to it, right? But you say, like, hey, there's a better way. Here it is. And this is what the benefit could be,
Yeah. So, I mean, you get back to that point about people don't want a 3-inch, hole drill. They want the 3-inch hole, right? Yeah. So you're talking about that working kind of backwards from their goal.
Yeah.
And then, how can we contribute to that goal? So how did, so it sounded like you were very much involved with the technical industry, but how did you get into networking? For example, I know the Radius, the AAAs, but you also worked for some interesting company that were very specialized in networking.
You could argue maybe too specialized. I suppose there's kind of a blessing and a curse of being really interested in cool tech, right?
Because sometimes,
tech is so cool that it's too cool.
Tell us more.
So for example, one of the companies I worked at, which was a company called Packet Design. I'm hoping to work for at least 5 or 6 companies in my career that have the word packet in it.
All right.
So far.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the first one was Packet Design, and they built what we developed was a multi-layer control plane monitoring system. And the foundation of that was what they call route analytics, which is basically passively peering with IGPs.
Yeah.
And, and basically getting all the like link state updates, and then calculating using the same, basically running Dijkstra or running the SPF.
Sure.
And calculating the paths.
Yeah,
and then do it. You would peer. Set up an adjacency per area, or whatever. Would choose your equivalent if it's a different protocol, and then because you need the full resolution of the paths, and then it would assemble an end to end of the IGP paths, and it also could, you know, pair with BGP and do those, and then, you know, overlay those on the IGP, because of course, as we know, BGP relies on the IGP for the internal routing,
right,
exits and all that kind of thing. And then, you know, static routes and, you know, LDP, which, yes, of course, follows the IGP, and then RSV PTE and multicast and, you know, like all this stuff, which was pretty amazing to see how you could create a pretty much real time. Now, IGP is just truly real time updates, because those link state updates are very, very granular in terms of their timing, right? They're pretty much as real time as the routers can make it. So that's, it was incredibly able that you could replay this stuff. But even with things that where you were scraping or pulling data, fairly short segments. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm going into way into this, but
it's
a fascinating product because you see, and then they overlaid flow data on it.
Sure.
So, right. So the entire path state of the network, considering all those layers of functionality and exceptions like static routes and such, you can say, all right, exactly how is traffic flowing through that network? It's amazing insight. You know, you have a big network, and we do mostly work with carriers. I mean, you could see exactly how much traffic was on all the links in your network by just collecting at the edges.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've looked at packet design. Well, maybe it was when I was at Amazon or whatnot, but yeah, there's like a lot of values to be gleaned just from the control plane and kind of replay that convergence. Yeah. Same thing with what, you know, like Batfish is doing, IntentionNet, and then to a certain degree, Suzy Q, right? Like they're all doing kind of these other stuff. But I agree that, you know, visibility could be gleaned from your just control plane, and then you could kind of replay that for, you know, maybe your post and pre operation or maintenance window validation.
Right. And if you think about, you know, capacity planning and things like that, you know, like a pre-change, like, hey, let's check it to see if this would have any adverse effects in terms of traffic balancing across links or paths and things like that, or, you know, edge to edge traffic exit points, all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of interesting things you could do with it that are very practical from the point of view of pre-validation, for example.
Yeah, I think the big thing that we were looking at was, first of all, you know, like when we're doing maintenance, we want to simulate it, right? Like, what have we not thought about that would have broken? That would have been broken. And then another was just capacity planning. I mean, how many people bought Arbor just to project like their traffic growth, right? So yeah, those two are definitely big use cases.
Yeah. So I mean, there's certainly it was you know, generations of product that did wrinkles of that. And, you know, now, I mean, one of the other companies I worked for was Kentek, and they were kind of like the cloud version of the Arbor, right?
You know,
scaled Arbor. And now obviously moved on and add a lot of other things to it. But that the idea that you can pull together a huge amount of traffic state and, you know, understand what it would do.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously Arbor was very, focus on the front end. Yeah, so I mean, I think we were early, at A10 Networks, you know, we're early partners of Kentek, and you know, we definitely saw how the amount of emphasis they have on the front end and making it observability beautiful, and that really appealing, that really appeals to a lot of network engineers and also their bosses.
Right. Yeah, I think I mean, another company I worked for that did a really good job of the elegance of UI was Thousand Eyes, right?
Mm,
I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Because the thing that they did, which was interesting, and maybe, you know, all these things are improvements. You know, everyone wants to argue that everything they've done is brand new; it's never been done before. But incrementally speaking, that even just to say, I've got a time slider. And I can look at things from the point of view of synthetic transactions and page loads and, you know, HTTP, you know, DNS, right? You know, paths, BGP, like I can look at all that in one place. And if I slide the timer, if I look at a synchronized timer, I can just visually correlate, hey, why did we have this, our latency, right? Our round trip go crazy for this set of users, you know, trying to use our applications. Aha, I see that this thing happened on the internet or whatever. Or, you know, it has nothing to do with the internet. It's simply there was something happening in our application that affected this. But just even teasing that apart visually really easily was very useful, right? And I think the state of the art of a lot of monitoring has been digestion and presentation for relatively expert consumption and interpretation.
Yeah, I think 1009 did a very good job in having the amount of data points that are hard to get from just the enterprise alone. So for a reasonable amount of price, they're able to see from outside in what that's been looked at and also extracting value from those data, right? So those two things are, you know, what I see as something that you cannot get from even for like a hyperscaler, right? They're, even though they are in all the continents, you know, outside of maybe the Antarcticas, but they still can't get that much visibility from a CDN perspective or from a 1009's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, well, I mean, hyperscaler networking is really different because it's not actually traditional.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All.
Super, super abstracted. And so, which there's obviously been massive amounts of investment into automation that abstracts everything. You know, your IPs are not sitting in normal blocks in segment.
No, there's no IPAM that's telling you which next block that you're going to be able to just take.
Right. It's more of like it's a very crude analogy, but more of like an airline reservation system, right? Rather than the kind of the structured hierarchy that typical networking protocols operate.
Yeah, so it sounds like you have this well-versed background and you're almost reaching your goal of working for, what is it, 5 companies with that has packet insight. Obviously all of them have tie-ins to automation, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. but what were some of the key points that you see as the challenge in telling the story for network automation today?
You know, I think that some of one of the talks that I thought was really interesting was by John Willis. So he came in to give a talk at Autocon about the lessons from DevOps. And
okay.
One of the things that he talked about is the way that I would call is sort of like crafting the stories and the iconic images and analogies. Like, you know, we talked about the wall of confusion, right? Where, you know, devs and ops were throwing stuff over the wall of confusion, right? This separation, this artificial separation, instead of having, an integrated team.
Yeah, that, like the Phoenix project. Well, the first part of the Phoenix project.
Right. And he named that as well. It's like having a canonical book, right? That was very relatable. And he talked a lot about like, yeah, we came up with these analogies and these pictures and even cartoons and things like that, that helped people grasp the importance of the culture change, because the culture change is, arguably, it's the bigger problem, right? One of my reflections, for example, is I was thinking about, I can't remember who is the guy from who talked about the Cisco Live automation, which is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, no worries. I'll find the name. I know who you're talking about.
It just is not occurring to me right now. But he used the analogy of like, you know, he was kind of making a joke of like not automated is finger-driven networking, right? You know. And I thought, you know, it's a clever little thing. But what strikes me about the storyline of the network, the networking person, if this is what you see in historical marketing as well towards networking people, is that it's the you're going to be blamed. It's a little, I would say a little bit kind of the sort of victim mentality story, being blamed constantly for everything. And, you know, it's a very lonely picture, right? You're sitting there up at night, typing stuff, answering stuff on your pager. And, you know, it's a very lonely picture.
Yeah. It's very sad.
It's sad. It's stressful. Sounds really horrible, right? Yeah. But more than anything, it struck me as lonely.
Okay.
You know, like, okay, you're typing on this CLI. That's something you do alone. You have to, like, you have all the configs on your laptop, maybe. You know, and then a lot of the storyline of what marketers was like, you can be you individually as a network engineer can be the hero, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many networking conferences have you gone to where they had like, be the hero, right? The superhero.
I believe that was the tagline for many of them.
Right. And because it's a psychological contrast between like, I am sort of being treated like the person in the basement with the pizza slipped under the door, mm-hmm. you know, and just, you know, keep typing and get that, make sure that network doesn't go down. But that's, you know, for example, the culture changes to say like, okay, well, in a lot of the talks we're like, this is a team sport. And they didn't say it in this way, but you know, the way I think of it, this is a team sport, right? And if you're automating, you're doing systems work and systems thinking, and how do we solve things at scale with repeatability? That's a team sport. It's no longer the lonely, you know, sort of mistreated, you know, networking hero who is the specialist in vendor X pet language. It's a team sport developing automation, developing orchestration, you know, aiming for business kind of intent, right? You can't do that all by yourself.
Yeah, but how do you tell that story though? What is the, you know, or have you found a successful way of telling people that, hey, get out of that basement. You know, there's no longer something you throw over the wall to operations team, right? Is, you know, get into a more of a system level mindset.
I think it's just something I've just started to think of. I mean, even just this sort of team sport analogy to me, I think there's something about coming up with these analogies and these pictures that they have to be simple enough. And that's why I kind of like the team sport analogy, mm-hmm. because it's not to say there aren't networking teams, but it wasn't, I mean, a lot of times it was like people doing their thing, mm-hmm. on, you know, tasks, taking tickets, doing, you know, if you look at the way that the folks, particularly who were giving talks, who are leaders, you know, a lot of what they've talked about is like, okay, we won't leave anyone behind. We're doing these sessions, we're learning together, and we're developing these things together. There's an emphasis on sharing. So I think even something as simple, and it's got to be sort of simple, mm-hmm. you know, team sport versus, you know, sort of lonely adventure, lonely CLI typer, you know, right? Is kind of there have to be some simple, powerful analogies to help kind of say like, if you're not working like this, you probably are not heading in the right direction. You're not where you belong, right? Where you really belong is doing things this way. And it's going to be so much better for you as for everyone. And by the way, that's the only way to get out of the dungeon. Mm. Yeah. Maybe it's just like pictures and analogies and things like that. So it's something that I really took to heart of to think about, like, what are those impactful analogies that would really help? And sometimes they just come out in talks and such. But hopefully over time, the community can really develop those things. We can develop analogous things that are the network engineering community's own thing, and not just sort of, you know, borrowed, slightly repurposed versions of older DevOps themes. And only because I think there needs to be pride of ownership.
Yeah.
The concepts, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you have that, then people will sign on. If it just feels like this is a retread, it's just not that. It doesn't inspire any imagination, right? Or ambition. So I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of sort of what I think of, at least.
I mean, I think that's true. And especially if you do the right analogy that drives through people, that people remember, they could be the advocate at the table, right? Because most of the time when, like, you and I are certainly not at the table when this engineer X after conference X, you know, goes back to the team and right. they try to advocate network automation versus you know, lonely CLI engineer, as you would say, that they have to come up with something that is more of internal. So the analogies are easier to be internalized, and they could identify with it, and they could be the advocate for you for that message, right? So I think that's definitely a good point to make.
I think the other thing that is a challenge and why this has to be have some thought given to it is one of the things that enabled DevOps to happen, and for that that was an external force and function, was cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the shift to cloud was, there was its own economics and business benefits, right? You know, OpEx versus CapEx, and, you know, ease of change and stuff like that. You know, reducing maintenance, you know, not to have to deal with software, upgrades, updates, all that sort of cycle overhead, and the ability to theoretically, at least, turn it on and turn it off. What happens is never get turned off, but
you still get billed by it, by the way.
Yeah. So that actually really helped people, because the cloud, you know, created herds of cattle to be herded.
Sure.
So if you could use that forcing function as like, well, this is the new way to do it for cloud. With networking, you don't get that same luxury. It's like, oh, guess what? We're still buying a box with ports on it.
Right.
It's not, you know, it hasn't magically just disappeared into a gauzy sort of, thing in the sky.
Yeah. I mean, I see that analogy. So instead of saying this is this beautiful thing that you spend hundreds and thousands of dollars that you cater and you unbox and spend all these effort rack and stacking, it's, you know, if you were to be in the cloud analogy, it's something that you spin up, you used up, and then you just compost right after. So we need to move like networking toward that kind of analogy. Right. Again, your pet versus cattle story.
But the thing is, you don't get the business, you don't get the air cover of that landscape changing. Like if the CIO and the CEO know, like, hey, everything's going to the cloud, then you can kind of ride the tailcoats of that, saying, well, and to do that, we have to do it the way those cloud people do it, which is DevOps and this, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the way to do it, because this is the way it works. It's totally different. So you don't get that air cover in networking, because you're still saying, hey, could you sign this purchase order for, you know, X dollars to buy these new boxes that we have to buy stores and HQs and whatever, data centers. It looks very much the same. So that's one of the challenges, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that's where the polarization that I see is happening, is for a company who are all, you know, committed to the cloud, at least majority to the cloud, that they have one set of mindsets and they're all gearing toward that. And it's easier to deliver that automation message to them. And there's also like the company who's maybe the biggest in their industry, but they still have 1.5 network engineers, and the 0.5 like have to deal with Windows machines and, you know, poor provisioning, right? So I think that's the kind of the polarization that I see, and the challenge is the same story cannot be told to two different groups.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Because if you think about a purely digital business, right? I mean, in a lot of cases, there's no, you know, I mean, once you get to a certain size, you probably need, and you're running a big enough service, you probably should have your own edge and all that, you know. But let's say before that, all you need is sort of like a cloud provider and, you know, pick a CDN service and, you know, a few other things, DNS provider. It's all like out there. You don't have to do anything. So all you're focusing on software anyway. And there's a direct tie to the value, because it's, you know, whereas the companies that have factories and, you know, offices and retail and all that sort of real world stuff, they still have to plug boxes in those places, right? They still have to deal with that long tail of brownfield deployed equipment, right? And so they have a different reality they're dealing with, and there's no one who thinks networking is fundamentally changing for us. And it doesn't count if you're using a network as a service subscription model. That's just a payment method, right? It's not a technology culture changer, you know, in an executive suite. Like, oh, look, you know, magically Cloud Provider X has, you know, replaced all of our actual hardware routers in our stores and warehouses and factories. That's not happening. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, this is probably like a good place to kind of take a pause and to breathe. I mean, we talked about your background. How did you get into marketing, technical marketing, as well as some of the challenges that, you know, to deliver that network automation message to people. So next week, we're going to, you know, dive right into it, maybe bring some specifics, some recommendations. And so stay tuned for our next session. So where, you know, Alex, where can people follow you and find some of your work? Where are the best places on social, maybe some other places?
I'm really primarily active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I have the benefit of having a probably globally unique name. So find me, thanks to hyphenating with my wife's last name.
Nice.
So, you can find me there.
Okay, great. And we'll include all these in the show notes. And thanks again for being here today. And we'll continue our conversation next week.
That's great. Thanks a lot for having me.
Cool. Thanks for listening to Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other major podcast platforms. Until next time. Bye-bye.